Listening Library presents Stronger, Faster, and More Beautiful by Arwen Ellis Dayton. Read for you by Michael Crouch, Carissa Vacker, Brittany Presley, Christopher Gebauer, Ari Fliakos, and Rebecca Lohman. To the next generation, and the next, and the next, and hopefully the next.
We have got to the point in human history where we simply do not have to accept what nature has given us. Jay Kiesling, Professor of Biochemical Engineering, University of California, Berkeley, in Wired, 2009. A few years from now. Part 1. Matched Pair.
Human, stop!
Is what I'm thinking, as if I've already become something else, a different species, and I'm tired of hearing all of his worn-out human-person logic. The man is reminding me that Julia's heart will be combined with my own heart, so it's not like I'm taking hers. It's a synthesis. The new heart will fuse both in a way that's better than either of the originals. A superheart, I guess you could call it. He is reminding me of this, and every time I say, but, he cuts me off by continuing his explanation, only more loudly. Now he's almost yelling, though he's just as cheerful as he always is. Did I mention that he's my father? And he's only repeating what my doctor has explained so many times. Although, let's be honest, my doctor explains the same things very differently. She discusses recovery rates, and reasonable percentages, and acceptable outcomes. She tells me about other patients, though of course, my case and Julia's case, the case of Evan and Julia Weary, semi-identical twins, is unique. So we are, as she likes to say, medical pioneers. I've come to think of us as the season finale episode of a show about strange medical cases. Tune in for the outrageous conclusion. I'm in my hospital room. But I'm sitting in a chair in the corner, because it's dangerous to stay in the hospital bed, which can be wheeled away for CAT scans, or blood draws, or surgery, or whatever, so easily. You have the illusion of control if you're sitting in a chair. Julia is in the adjoining room. She's on the bed, of course. And though I can hear our mother in there with her, she's only saying a few quiet words to my sister. Then my sister is not saying anything in reply.
This is fortune smiling on us, Evan,
my father says, using what has become one of his favorite phrases. He looms over me, because I'm sitting down while he's standing, and also because he's 6'5".
Years from now, you're going to look back on these weeks and wonder why you ever hesitated. Julia would want her heart and yours to be joined.
Whenever he senses me becoming skeptical about what we're going to do, my father finds a new angle to convince me. This is the new angle for today. Julia's fondest wish is for our twin hearts to become one.
But I'm the only one who will get to use the heart, I tell him. It's not like we're turning into one person and sharing it. I get the heart. She gets nothing.
He raises his voice another notch as he says,
Would you rather put hers in the ground? Alone and cold? To rot?
Even he can hear the hysteria that has snuck into his argument. He lowers the volume to something like normal conversational level and adds,
You know she wouldn't want that. She does get something. She gets you alive. I'm the one who gets that. She gets it too, Evan.
I hope that's true.
You sound out of breath, my father says. How about we keep our voices calm?
This is an infuriating suggestion, since he's the one who's not calm. But his observation is accurate. I'm having trouble catching my breath. I concentrate on forcing air in and out of my chest. I notice that we're only talking about Julia's heart, even though she'll give me so much more. Her liver, part of her large intestine, her kidneys, even her pancreas. It's too depressing to keep mentioning all the pieces of both of us that aren't working right. So my parents and I have begun using the heart as a stand-in for everything. I look up at him wearily.
Dad, why do we keep talking about it anyway? You already decided. You decided too, Evan.
I sigh. And though I try to sound as angry as possible, he's right. I did decide. When the nurses show up to do tests, my father leaves. He doesn't like to stick around for the nitty-gritty, which used to annoy me, but now is a relief. If my father is present, he considers it an obligation to insert as many positive comments as possible into whatever uncomfortable hospital procedure is happening. It's not ideal to have to make appreciative noises about the weather and baseball scores when a male nurse is putting a catheter into your penis, for example. With my father gone, I hardly have to say anything. Nurse. Does that hurt? Me. A little. Nurse. Is this better? Me. A little. Nurse. Can you roll over onto your back now? I don't even have to answer that. I just have to do it. Later, I'm left alone in my hospital room. This is the last day. It will happen in the morning. Julia and I have just barely made it to our 15th birthday. And now comes whatever is next. I am not immune to daydreams. I imagine slipping on my clothes, walking out of the hospital, and asking my mother to bring me somewhere peaceful to die. My favorite fantasy locations are on a beach overlooking Lake Michigan, or on the moon base, while staring up at the small blue face of Earth. Yes, I know there isn't any moon base, but I'm not sneaking out of the hospital either. The daydreams are tempting. But here's the truth of it. Death sucks more than life. Almost no matter what. There. I've admitted it. I want to live. Black. It feels wrong. I get off my hospital bed and go into the connecting room. Julia's. My heart races as soon as I'm on my feet. But if I move slowly, I can keep it from getting out of hand. Julia's room is kept nice and quiet, and mostly dark, though it's still daytime, so cloudy light comes in through the slatted blinds over the window. Her ventilator hisses and clicks. Her bed is surrounded by IV stands that are providing her food, her water, her drugs. Dripping, dripping, dripping away. Hey. I say, out of breath when I reach the edge of her bed. Hey, she says. Not out loud, of course. But I know she says it. Julia is gray and her cheeks are hollow, but she's still beautiful. Her hair is red, like mine, but hers is much longer, and it's been fanned out across her pillow, by our mother, probably, as if she's posing for an illustration in a book of fairy tales. Here is Snow White. Awaiting the kiss of a prince to wake her. Here is Sleeping Beauty, for whom the rest of the world has been frozen. I slide myself onto the bed next to her and lie there as my heart and lungs slow down, listening to the sounds of the machine that is breathing for her. Hey, I say again. It's so boring here, she tells me quite clearly, though again not out loud. The time when Julia can speak out loud is over. I've realized that being a medical pioneer is mostly about surviving the boredom, I tell her. Julia sighs, silently, of course. Then she tells me, when the doctor calls us that, I imagine us in a covered wagon with one of those old-timey black doctor's bags. Why do people think being a pioneer is good? I wonder aloud. Isn't it better to be way at the back of the line, after all the kinks have been worked out? This is going to sound mean, Julia tells me, but I never even liked real pioneers. In those little house books, I kept wondering why they didn't stay in New York or Chicago, where all the fun stuff was happening. You're a snob, I tell her. They were brave. Yeah, they probably were, she admits. Then, you're going to be brave too, Evan. Yuck. You sound like one of those greeting cards with the fancy cursive.
I got sappy there for a second.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?